Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Did you know that you can eat a daylily? Larry Mueller here. There are a lot of beautiful plants that are safe to eat, and we're going to talk about them with our guest today on Garden Talk, Mark Dwyer. It's great to have Mark back. He's director of horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, just beautiful gardens. So we'll talk with him about some ornamental edibles, catch up what's going on at the Rotary Gardens, and of course, we'll take your gardening questions as well, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Mark Dwyer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's a pleasure.
Well, so what are some of your favorite edible ornamentals?
Well, of course, when you think of edibility, it's a subjective thing.
Sure.
We all have different tastes. But at home, I really enjoy incorporating colorful lettuces and Swiss chard and a lot of the greens throughout the landscape. And I certainly feel things like hot peppers and even some tomatoes, as they mature into their colors, they also offer ornamentality to the landscape. So there's a lot of great plants that can be either utilized in containers or as part of traditional landscaping that offer the additional benefit of being edible.
Yeah. How do you know if it's safe to eat one plant over another?
Well, that's, they always say everything's edible, sometimes only once. So you certainly need to be careful with that. And of course, you know, using Rotary Botanical Gardens as an example, we don't encourage anyone to nibble because there are food allergies and other things that might be a factor. So doing a little research is important because when you talk about, you know, separate topics, something like mushrooms, when people assume they're edible and they're not, that can be, tragic mistake, of course.
I remember a family that had moved from France to the Washington, D.C. area, and they all died. They went out, picked some mushrooms because they always picked mushrooms where they were in France, and ate those mushrooms and died.
Mm.
So it can be a terrible thing. But on a very positive note, taking a look at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville, this is your 30th anniversary. Where'd
30th.
The time go?
I know. And I've been there 21 years. So I recall I started year 9, and so our 10th anniversary was a great celebration. And then we hit our 20th and 25th. And now with our 30th, it's really amazing. And I think if folks have never been or have not been recently, it's, I think, our best year yet in terms of appearance and what we're doing. So we do hope folks will visit and certainly visit your local botanic gardens and arboretum as well.
So what are your specialty gardens this year?
Well, the specialty gardens, you know, our big color theme we're calling a kaleidoscope of color. We traditionally focus on one or two colors, but this is a real rainbow of colors in terms of the overall appeal. We're doing our Plants of the World collection again, featuring plants from 13 different countries. We have a begonia display, a pollinator heavy planting in terms of our children's garden is a pollinator theme. And we're doing a lot of other exciting things in terms of plant combinations. We just hope people will come and enjoy it. And there's a lot of upgrades going on out in the gardens. And it's a stellar year so far.
And you have a lot of specialty events. You always have quite a few, but this year I assume there's some more with the 30th anniversary celebration.
There are. There's many coming up, including in July. I think July 20th, we have a special event on that Saturday. But the gardens are going to peak in terms of summer color here in the coming weeks. And I would encourage people to get on our website and see not only when to visit and how to get there, but educational opportunities, other events. You know, we're not too far away from starting to set up lights for our massive holiday light show either. I hate to say it, but it's true.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah, and you're right about ease. I mean, you're right off the interstate. It's a couple of minutes and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And the website, I think we have a link on our page, wpr.org/Larry. But what is it for those?
Sure, it's www.rotarybotanicalgardens.org.
There you go. So easy enough to find, and I hope you'll take a look. There's always lots of great photos and of course, a lot of information about what's going on there. Jim in Hartford has a question for you. Let's see if we can help him out. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Well, we have a hydrangea that is probably 15 years old, and it's blossomed beautifully every year, but it quit blossoming. It hasn't done anything this year. And the second question going along with it, I have a wisteria that's about 5 years old that grows and grows and grows but never blossoms. Any ideas?
Well, Jim, with your hydrangea, could you describe the blossoms? Is it, you know, is it a rounded sphere of white, or is it one of the more colorful
Correct.
Blue? Okay.
No, it's a rounded white.
Sure. Well,
and it's a pretty good sized plant. It's probably, I keep it cut back to about 6-8 feet across.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And that's likely a smooth hydrangea, the ones that get the big snowball white blooms. You know, the issue we're seeing with a couple of ours at the gardens this year, Jim, are extremely lush foliage and stem growth. And I'll back up a step and say we typically prune ours down over the winter months to just a couple inches because we'll get new growth. They bloom on both old and new wood, so I don't think it was an issue of bud loss with our tough winter because you would get some new growth that would likely form buds, but some of ours have not yet started to bloom yet. So if you're not seeing any activity yet, hopefully something will happen for you. But, you know, with that crazy winter we had, we're seeing some effects on a lot of different things. Now, your wisteria is another challenge because, you know, our wisteria has just finished blooming. But in many cases, wisterias, if they're in really good soil, and I'm not presuming that's the case for yours, in really good soil, they tend to lean towards a lot more foliage and stem growth at the expense of flowering. So the vigor sounds good, but the fact that you've never seen blooms, it's an exercise in patience, and hopefully that'll come through for you at some point in time.
And lay off the fertilizer probably, huh?
At least for sure, if that's a factor.
Yeah, for sure. Jim, thanks so much for calling. Katie emailed that she has a rock garden with Creeping Jenny. This year it didn't come well. She actually sent us a couple of photos. She pruned her St. John's wort hard this spring. She has growth on some branches and nothing on others. What did she do wrong?
Actually, I don't think she's done anything wrong. The golden creeping Jenny we're viewing here, and for your listeners, it's Lysimachia numularia is the fancy Latin for it. But be warned that it's a spreader. It is a ground cover that takes up some real estate, likes it wet. And I could have taken that same picture at the gardens this morning because ground level Lysimachia, earwigs will tend to decimate it, slugs. There's a lot of ground level critters that'll come out at night and decimate it. They tend to get some regrowth, but what's interesting is that same plant in an elevated container or another situation where it's not ground level sees no damage whatsoever. Huh. So that is not unusual to see. She could seek some sort of control for those ground level critters, but that's a tough plant and will not die because of that. It should flush back out. Hypericums, the shrubby St. John's worts, for us, very challenging. They're quite hardy, but with that tough winter, and I'll probably keep saying that because I don't want to presume all your listeners had the same tough winter, but that February, March was brutal for us. We had our hypericums in the ground for 20 years that had severe dieback. So in her cutback, what she's done is cut this back to a certain degree, and some have growth, some don't. Give it another week or two and really see where the growing points are. And if it's really sporadic here and there, cut the entire plant down to 6 to 8 inches. And it'll take a year or two, but that'll come back and flush back out. So her approach, I think, is prudent in removing dead wood, but it may end up being an irregular shaped shrub, hence my comment about severe uniform cutback.
Right. Well, let's take a call. Joy in West Bend, we'll go to you next. Hi.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One is about early blight on tomatoes. I planted our tomatoes, probably in the early part of June, and it looks like we have early blight already. I don't know if I'll get to the point where we get any tomatoes. So I'm wondering if there's anything I can do at this point. And the other question is about, you might call this an ornamental edible. We have a silver maple tree that put out tons and tons of helicopters this year. That's usually a sign that when they make a lot of seeds that they're stressed. We've lost a lot of branches. The leaves look more sparse than usual. And it's a tree that we tap for syrup. We have another one that's just as big, and it looks healthy, and they're maybe 50 feet apart. So I'm just wondering if you have any ideas about it.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, in reference to the tomato blight, I would encourage you to get positive diagnosis of that. It has been very cool and wet, which would lend itself to issues like that. In terms of what you can do about it, I would lean on your extension agent if you get that diagnosis. But I will tell you something we've seen with our tomatoes as we were planting them in late May, early June, is the season never has warmed up for us down in Janesville until now. So soil temperatures have been quite cool. So it's actually not too late to plant tomatoes, perhaps in a different location, and still get a decent crop. So I wouldn't write those tomatoes off, but over the radio, it'd be tough to give you a diagnosis. Now, the silver maple, maples in general, we saw some severe damage over the winter. We lost a lot of Japanese maples. I know further north in our state, many of you perhaps can't grow those, but we saw a lot of thinning of maples, late emergence of leaves, and we're not overly worried about it. We think things will flush back out perhaps next year. And of all the maples, you know, silver maples are quite tough. Soft-wooded and fast-growing is the drawback to those. But yeah. I wouldn't be overly concerned unless you see the same symptoms next spring.
There you go, Joy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Ellie in Eau Claire will give you a chance. Hi, Ellie.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just calling about the gentleman who called because his wisteria wasn't blooming.
Yeah.
Up here in Eau Claire, I've got one that's lived since I put it in 2006 to 2007, but this is the first year it has bloomed. So, you know, maybe he really does need to exercise a lot more patience.
That's a long time to wait, Ellie.
Well, people kept telling me you're too far north and it's not going to bloom for you. You're going to have foliage, but you're not going to have bloom. And so I just kind of gave up on it blooming. And then I looked out one morning and there it was.
12 years later or so.
Yeah, exactly.
So sometimes it takes a while, Ellie. Thanks. A comment from you, Mark?
Well, I'm glad Ellie shared that story because it is an exercise in patience. And folks should know that a lot of the Asian wisterias are hardy in terms of foliar and stem growth, but on occasion take, again, many years to bloom, which we're hearing right now. And many horticultural myths include, you know, the more you stress them out, the earlier they'll bloom, or that it takes 7 years for them to bloom from the time of planting. I don't know that I believe any of that, but I will say there's some North American native wisterias. They have smaller flowers, a little less fragrance, but are very reliable. And we have one at the gardens, a couple of them. The variety is Blue Moon, which is a real nice one. But look at some of the native North American wisterias for reliable bloom. And again, to Ellie's point, patience is a virtue.
There you go. Thanks, Ellie. Appreciate it very much. Mark Dwyer, our guest today, he directs the horticulture for the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. We're taking a look at ornamentals today. We've talked a little about edible ornamentals and taking other questions from you. Wisteria has come up a time or two, but there are other questions that you might have, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Ellen sent a photo of her Japanese hydrangea. In the past summers, it's been full of leafy plants and only one flower blossom. This season, all we find is the growth. Is there anything she can do to restore the plant?
Well, for your listeners, what we're looking at is climbing hydrangea, and these photos, I don't even see growth on them.
I don't see any.
No, and maybe it's budding out late. Japanese hydrangea vines, climbing hydrangeas, frequently will suffer some dieback in tough winters, and they're a little harder to grow further north in the state. If she does see growing points, I think Ellen just should make a cut to that point, and that may mean removing a lot of the vine. The other issue with that vine and looking at those supports is it's a vine that tends to cling and it's not much of a twiner. So we can't see the bottom of the photo, but I'd be curious to know if there's any damage down low or if it loosened in the soil or something that might have led further to its demise. But if they are actively alive, just do some judicious trimming and they'll be back.
All right. There you go. Thank you so much for that photo and question. Let's take another call from Katie in Minocqua. Hi, Katie.
Yes, hi, Larry. I know you have a lime tree, limey.
Yeah.
And I recently got a key lime and Meyer lemon tree that's grafted together. And I just want to know what type of fertilizer to use on that.
Well, for limey, I don't do a lot. I put, I have some fish emulsion fertilizer that I use. I just pour a couple tablespoon or two in the water jug, and that is all I have ever used in all of the years I've had it. And limey produces an awful lot of limes.
Yeah, I think with the citrus and to Larry's point with his specimen, a low blend of fertilizer in terms of that NPK, that nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The danger in high nitrogen fertilizers is a lot of foliar growth, perhaps at the expense of fruiting. So whether it's a slow-release fertilizer or Larry's comment on fish emulsion, I think that's your best approach. And there's lots of online research and out there in terms of how to deal with them, particularly over the winter months with proper lighting and temperatures as well.
Yeah, and every time I water about once a week or so, and when I water, I put a little water in the bottom of the jug, and then I pour in the fish emulsion, and then I put in the rest of the water I'm going to use, and then I forget about it. So, Katie, I hope, does that help?
Yes. Is yours a pot done that you bring in and out?
Yeah, it sits. I have a second off my second floor bedroom. It's south facing, and so in the winter time, it sits in my bedroom, which is actually nice because it smells great. And I have a pole lamp that I have put grow lights in, and I the pole lamp actually works pretty well because you get the light at three different kind of levels of the plant. And then in the spring, I take Limey out onto the second story deck, and she sits there until it's, well into October for sure. And as soon as I bring her back in, she immediately flowers like crazy. And I have a lot of limes coming my way in a relatively short period of time. So it's an in-and-out tree for sure. Does that help?
Said, like fertilizer, would the fill number of the fertilizer be higher or lower?
The which?
Like the middle number, if it's 10, 10, 10, or 10, 30, 10,
I think
nitrogen is the one that you want a lower concentration.
Yeah, I think we're not talking 10, 10, 10. We're talking like 3 or maybe 2, 1 or something like that.
Yeah, really, really low numbers would be sufficient.
The fish emulsion. That's why I think the fish emulsion is so good, because mm-hmm. it's really, really low numbers. So there you go. Thank you so much for that call, Katie. Appreciate it. By the way, you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Questions about plants that you have, maybe disease, maybe it's growing them, give us a call. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Don sent an email and would like to know what's causing the yellowing and browning in the full sun areas of his lawn. Sent some photos. The rest of the lawn is lush and green. It's hard to tell as we look at this, it's hard to tell how closely he's mowed that grass. If he's mowed it really low, that could create some problems, wouldn't it, Mark?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the rest of the lawn and presumably more shade is nice and green and lush. So the sunny areas are looking like this photo with a lot of browning. It's tough to say. We're heading into a season where it's usually a little later in summer for us where we start to see some browning in the lawn that might be indicative of grubs or something else nibbling on the roots. So Don could peel up a couple pieces and see if anything's going on underneath it. But I think I would lean on our wonderful extension agents and send this photo along, because whether it's a nutrient deficiency or something else related to the weather we're having, they would have a better angle.
As I looked at it, I thought right away, because it almost seems to be in a line, I said, I wonder if there's a pipe or some other something else that was put in, you know, maybe even a long time ago, so that the soil along that pipeline might be different from mm-hmm. the soil just to the right or left of it.
Right. Right. A soil test.
That could create mm-hmm. a problem.
Sure.
So you're right. A soil test might not be a bad idea. Thanks a lot for that photo and the question. Derwin in Waukesha, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Derwin.
Hi there. How you guys doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
So Aldi was selling some hydrangeas this year, and I bought some, and they say on the tag, Saxon. And I can't find any information on them. I even reached out to the UW Extension, and they couldn't really tell me anything about them.
Saxon?
You guys have any idea?
As in S-A-X-O-N?
Correct.
Derwin, what color were the, when you bought them, were they in bloom? And if so, what was the color of the blossoms?
Well, I bought four total. Two that I kept are pink. And the two that I gave a female friend of mine have pink and purple.
Mm. Okay.
And they're kind of woody as far as the stems are concerned.
Right.
They're a dwarf hydrangea.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, and it's likely many of the floral type hydrangeas that are sold at floral shops and other places fall into the macrophylla type hydrangeas. And I'm guessing through this. I think the concern with them is that they may be winter hardy in terms of growth, but they may be old school macrophyllas that only bloom on on old wood, meaning. And I should back up and ask, have they been in the ground over a season and they've come back, or you just have them this year so far?
This year and just put them into pots.
Sure.
So if necessary, I guess I can drag them in and out with the rest of my tropicals. But
yeah, they still may need a winter dormancy. I'll use an example from my home. My wife received some of the floral type hydrangea, some beautiful blue ones, years ago, and put them in the back. And we've had them for 15 years. And every year they flush out growth. They die to the ground because of our winters, and they flush 3 to 4 feet of stem and foliage, but have never rebloomed. And that's simply because there's no old growth for them to have flower buds on. So the concern, and I don't know the Saxon line of hydrangeas, to be honest, but my concern is these things overwintering successfully that for you to experience the same blooms next year. So maybe if you get a hold of the company, they might have some advice for how to overwinter them, because they still may need a dormancy period independent of, you know, bringing them inside. So tough call.
Yeah, tough call. There may be, I don't know if you'd be able to winterize them a bit at the end of the season, and hopefully they would live through the year, live through the winter. And I think you're right, though, about contacting the company itself and just asking and seeing what they've got. Wish we could be more help on that one. Derwin, I appreciate your call. Rose in Glenwood City, it's your turn. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, hello there. We have an oak tree in our yard that doesn't look as healthy as usual, and we're wondering if it might have oak wilt. Some of the leaves are mottled with kind of brownish spots. It's a lot thinner looking than usual, more little fine dead branches. As of this spring, it now has a lovely new seam going right down one side that starts at least 8 feet up and goes to the ground. It does have a ton of woodpecker holes, but it has always appeared healthy despite those. And I'm wondering where I can send a leaf or, you know, get someone to tell me, yes, this is oak wilt or what it is and that kind of thing.
Is there any, is there dieback on the top of the tree?
No, there's not any wilt. The top, you know, the leaves from down on the ground look green and they're standing up nicely, you know, they're not wilting.
Hmm. Doesn't quite sound like oak wilt to me, but
yeah. Is your oak tree? Does it have pointed lobe leaves or rounded lobe?
Yeah, it's pointed, so
red oak.
Be a red. Yeah.
Yeah, the red oak family is oak wilt affects them more severely than the white oak family in many ways, and in terms of sending a sample, and I imagine you could send it to one of the diagnostic labs on
you
campus.
You could send it to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. If you go online to UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, Brian Huddleston can take a look, and you might want to send some healthy ones and then some that are maybe look partially diseased.
Yeah, Brian would specify, you know, if sending some small stems, and oak wilt is tragic. It's very quick in terms of killing anything in the red oak family, and it spreads via root grafts. Maybe if you have other oaks nearby, the concern is how it spreads, also by beetle vectors. So it's a nasty business if that's the case. So quick diagnostic on this, I think, is in order. It may just be an aging tree with some stress. You mentioned a crack, maybe has some early anthracnose with that mottling and spotting. But, you know, a decline in an oak is always a concern because many times that's the slow march towards death, and hopefully it's not. And I don't want to presume that's what's happening, but I think it's beyond our conversation today in getting that diagnosis.
Sometimes it's not a very slow progression. Sometimes it's pretty fast progression. So you want to get that looked into as soon as possible. Rose, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic would be a place to send in. You could even send in, you could do it today if you had some photos of the leaves and the twigs. He might be able to give you something almost instantly if you send some good photos to Brian. So thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, John emailed that he likes that deer like lilies, too. He sent a photo of his flowerless plants that they eat the flowers right off. Stella in Sturgeon Bay called to remind people not to dig in their yard without calling Digger's Hotline. And she also said dead grass can be a sign of a natural gas leak. And I think she's right about that as well. And as you look at that line, almost a line in the lawn, that, you know, that's another consideration to take into account for sure.
You bet.
We've talked about sensory engagement before in the garden, which I found that really interesting. Go over it again and talk about why it's something gardeners should consider.
Well, when you think about the reasons we garden, a lot of us certainly do it for beautification. Maybe it's to grow food, to just have a respite and enjoy being out in those areas. But if our plants can serve double duty in terms of having additional sensory interest, for instance, fragrance, perhaps a tactile feel, again, I think getting multifaceted plants becomes important. And in our newest garden at Rotary Botanical Gardens, our wellness garden, we've included a lot of sensory-type plants for engagement. We had a group earlier this week with some vision impairments that came through and did a tactile exploration of fuzzy leaves, scented geraniums. So it was a real exploration. And, you know, I think our gardens are more than just sight, what we see. So that immersion becomes important. And I think we can all do a little bit more to make a sensory experience by including water or other elements as well.
So what are, just thinking about that, what are some common plants or some good plants just that you might consider to add in?
Well, when you think about permanent plants, there's a lot of fragrant woody plants. And many of us know in early spring we have the lilacs and fragrant viburnums. We're segueing into oriental lilies and a lot of fragrant summer perennials. Many, many herbs fit the bill for that tactile and fragrance, whether it's basil or rosemary. We're doing a lot with citrus-based plants, lemongrass, lemon verbena. And we're having a lot of fun with fragrant mints. Of course, mints, you need to be very careful on how you plant and contain them. But also some fun things like scented geraniums, those that smell like chocolate or peppermint or lemon or strawberry. And this is how we're getting kids interested in gardening, for them to say, hey, this plant smells like popcorn. And there literally is a plant that has a bloom that smells like buttered popcorn. So just a great way to get kids involved as well.
Love it. Christina in Glenwood City, your turn. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. You're making me hungry with that butter popcorn and chocolate geranium.
I know what you mean.
Well, I have four shrubs, a Weigela, purple leaf sand cherry, hawthorn, and pink shrub rose. And they had not been managed, so they're like 8 feet tall and not looking their best. I was hoping for a direction for appropriate rejuvenation pruning.
Well, actually, I wish we had this conversation about a month ago. It would have been a little more ideal to do it as they were just flushing out, but all of those plants will respond to some severe pruning at this point. So the Weigela, the challenge there, they're sort of an unkempt shrub, so you know, they arc out, they have an interesting form, but with any of the four plants you mentioned, what I'm going to allude to is the fact that when you prune them back, what you should be doing is cutting back to a point about 1 foot below your desired size or height. The reason for that is these plants will respond very quickly with new growth, and then you can maintain them at a height, so you won't have the issue of having them constantly get really big and downsizing every couple of years. You take it down to a foot below your desired height. The Weigela, the purple sand cherry, you can cut back quite severely. The real danger with any of this is as we head into the really hot part of summer, some of that new growth might be prone to sun scald. You know, if we have a dry spell, you got to keep these things watered. Hence my earlier comment about doing a little earlier in the season, or perhaps even in winter. The hawthorn, that's likely a small tree for you. You need to be a little careful with that as well. That might be best as some structural pruning in the winter months. They're not overly easy to downsize, so be careful there. They're also prone to a lot of diseases, so that may be inevitable with this wet year. And I'm trying to recall the fourth shrub that you mentioned.
What was the fourth one again, Christina?
It's a pink shrub rose.
Pink shrub rose.
Yeah, the rose is, I don't know if it's actively blooming, but I would wait to a point in time when it's done blooming and then cut it back. Give it a real heavy haircut and it'll respond. I wouldn't worry about damaging that.
There you go, Christina. Thank you so much for calling. Pat in Superior, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I've heard lupins are very good for butterflies and for bees, and I'd like to get a patch going. But can I throw the seeds in the soil right now and expect them to come up next year, or should I wait until next year to start them?
Well, you're a lot further north than we are, and you know your best approach with lupin seeds is to sow them the fall previous or really early in spring. So I know you perhaps are a bit cooler up there. The danger in sowing them right now is they'll germinate, but they may not bloom and harden off for the following season. So I would wait, and I would sow some in perhaps November and another batch in March or April, and you should be good to go.
All right. Thanks, Pat. Joe in Rockford, Illinois. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I've emerald ash borer possibility. I've got some ash trees that are not doing well. They don't seem to be leafing out, and I don't know if it's ash borer, but if it is ash borer, how important is it to remove those trees?
Well, it's likely if you're seeing symptoms like bark flaking off, and it's very likely you have emerald ash borer. And, you know, the issue with prompt removal, it's likely there's thousands of ash in Rockford that are smitten with this right now. So it is a good idea to get rid of them as soon as you can. But, again, if everyone's not doing it, it's the beetle's going to continue to spread and we'll continue to have issues. And in our community of Janesville and throughout Wisconsin, further north of you, there's similar issues. So I would talk to an arborist about a timely removal because that's really ideal. We need to get rid of the host here in areas where this is prevalent.
Yeah, and you can drive through the countryside and you can pick out just about any ash tree because there are no leaves on it. So many of them are dying. Joe, thank you for calling. Meg in Columbia County, your turn. Hi, Meg.
Hi there. I have a bridal wreath spirea, and I believe I was told that I should trim it after it's done blooming. I could be wrong on that. But my concern is that it's been done blooming now for a while, and I'm wondering if it's too late or if that is even the right time to trim it.
Well, Meg, the question with your bridal wreath spirea is your intent, you know, they have a nice arcing wide sort of vase-shaped form. What's your intent in pruning it? To downsize it or what's your ultimate goal?
Yes, it's in the front of the house, Oh, I'm sorry. That's my GPS. Okay, it stopped. It's in the front of the house, and it's just kind of taking over, so I would just like it a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's ideally you would have pruned it right after it finished blooming, and I'll say we've experimented with some of our bridal wreaths in terms of severe cutback, taking them way down and having them regenerate. The issue, because Japanese spireas, the rounded little meatball-type spireas, respond very quickly to pruning. They bounce right back. They'll rebloom. You can cut them down in winter, and they come back. Bridal wreaths are not as responsive to heavy pruning. So you can shear that spirea now. You can downsize it. You'll see some new growth. Your flowering will be sporadic and maybe compromised next year, but then it'll be back on track in 2021. So it's really up to you. Otherwise, give it a nice shear after it blooms next year. But that's having you make you wait another year. That's really on you if you want to go at it now.
There you go. Thank you so much, Meg, for calling. And on to Nicole in Appleton. Hi, Nicole.
Hi. I have a puzzling question about what I think is a hydrangea in my yard. I have a lot of hydrangeas, but this one has woodier stems, and it's got two different leaves on the same branch. So some of the leaves look like a traditional hydrangea leaf, and then some of them look more like an oak leaf hydrangea. And like I said, there are some branches that have both different shapes on the same branch. So curious if I've created some sort of weird hybrid inadvertently, or if you've ever seen two different leaves like that before.
Boy, I'd love to see a photo. Would be a
great
way to determine that. The oak leaf hydrangea is the oak leaf itself. The form is quite indicative. Some of the juvenile leaves don't have as much of a lobe to them, but I'm curious to see what you have. And the fact that it's on the same stem is intriguing. So it's likely it's not some new interspecific cross of hydrangea, but I'm real curious. I wonder if you're able to send a photo to Larry. It'd be great to look at it.
Nicole, can you send us a photo?
Sure, I can do that. I'll do that.
All right, send it now, and we'll get a look at it. And go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and send the photo, and we'll take a look at it. So hang in there. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Mark Dwyer, our guest today, director of horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens of Janesville. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at ornamentals. We talked about edible ornamentals a little earlier with our guest, Mark Dwyer, from the Rotary Botanical Gardens. It's great to have him along. Thank you so much for calling in and for listening. Questions, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Dave in Boulder Junction next. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I've got a Chinese elm. It's a mature tree. It's probably 30 or 40 feet high. And the leaf canopy is just very thin this year. It was sort of thin last year, but it seems to be getting worse. It was very slow to leaf out. The leaves that it has seem to be smaller than normal. It's in a lawn where it's fertilized. The fertilizer doesn't have any herbicide in it. Just wondering if it's just getting towards the end of its life or if there's something else that's wrong with it.
Yeah, it's real tough to say. You know, at our garden, some of our Chinese elms are Siberian elms, red elms, some of these other elm species. Typically a little late to leaf out, this year in particular, quite late, and we have seen some reduced size on leaves with some of our woody plants, so I don't think I'd get the chainsaw out yet, but they do have a shelf life, and that sounds like a pretty good-sized specimen, so I think if you see further decline, you might want to have an arborist look at it, but if you start having small branches falling and it starts shedding a little bit, it may be headed towards its demise, but Tough to say without seeing it.
Yeah, there you go, Dave. Thank you so much for calling. I give it a little time yet, though. Pam in Whitewater, hello.
Hi, good morning. I have mock orange hedge, and it's blooming right now, and I need to trim it back. It's got to be 8-10 feet tall. When's a good time to trim it? And anything else I need to know?
I think as soon as you stop seeing white, as soon as those blooms fade out, go on, you know, go to town on it. And so you want to prune it right after it's done blooming. And to an earlier comment, if you heard my mention of, if you have a desired height where you want it at, say, 6 feet tall, prune that hedge to 5 feet, and you'll get some new growth this year, and then you can maintain that. But they're a tough shrub. You know the fragrance. That's probably why you have it. So get those shears and loppers ready to go.
All right. Thanks for calling, Pam. Let's go to Kathy in Milwaukee next. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I live in Milwaukee near the lake, and we had to remove our treasured Japanese bloodgood maples because they had verticillium wilt. And we're looking to replace them with something else that will be just as beautiful and contrasting with the purple leaves, umbrella form, small. But I understand we can't put the Japanese maples back in because that disease is soil-borne.
Right. With the Japanese red maples, we just removed 20 from the gardens, and it was a more of a winter kill issue for us. Although we've had verticillium wilt, and you're right, you don't want to replant Japanese maples or any type of maple in that same soil. So the challenge is mimicking that same vivid red with something with a similar shape. And there's all sorts of maroon foliage woody plants, things like smokebush. There's some maroon leaf filberts. The list goes on and on, but to replicate the Japanese maple in appearance is quite challenging. If you have another location, though, a different spot in the garden in terms of hardiness, this goes back to my comment about us removing them due to winter kill, we found that the full moon type maples, Acer japonicum, different species, there's many threadleaf forms. They're mostly green, unfortunately, during the growing season, but they were extremely hardy, and every one of them made it through. So you're a little milder towards the lake there, so the hardiness may not be as much of an issue. But offhand, it's very difficult to recommend something that'll mimic the beauty of those Japanese maples. That's a huge loss.
Yeah, it definitely is. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Some other callers online. Let's go to Raj. Joe in Wisconsin Dells. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have a question about my burning bushes, and your call screener said that I'm not the first one to have this. The ones that turn red in the fall?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did the initial growth spurt this spring. They usually, new cane. And then the leaves all fell off. I'm guessing maybe one of them late snow, cold weather thing we got. They're starting to leaf out a little bit down at the bottom again, and some of the branches up high are getting some leaves on them again.
Yeah, Joe, as we speak here, we just finished last week cutting about 40 burning bushes down to 12 to 18 inches, and they were all 5 to 7 footers. They experienced the exact same thing that you've gone through, and you alluded to the problem, and that was that late polar vortices we had in February and March, I think created a lot of tissue damage and some of the late cool weather. So burning bush, which is normally rock solid in terms of hardiness, we had sporadic growth. We had some that looked totally dead, but we saw green down low, and we just uniformly chopped them down. And they'll recover. They'll come back up. But the spotty regrowth concerns me because I don't think you'll ever get the same fullness of your original plant. So unfortunately, it was a tough winter, but that's a tough plant. And if you're seeing some growth down low, give it a chop.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Raj now in Mercer. Hi, Raj.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I would talk to a forester a few years back, and she says that these lupins are invasive. And they got a lupin festival up here in Mercer. And I was just wondering if this is that so or not. She's been a really common-sense person all the years I've known her, so I'm just kind of verifying this.
Yeah.
I guess offhand, I don't know. When we use the word invasive, we need to be careful that we understand the mechanisms how these plants spread, because there are plants that are put on an invasive list for the state. So it'd be worthy of checking that list to double check on these lupins. But lupins do reseed. So once they get established, they start to fill in. They'll fill in a garden. I've never viewed it as overkill or something that's become problematic. So maybe the comment about the lupins at the time was, once you get them going, they start to work their way around a landscape. That's a little different than becoming invasive. But I think it's worthy of a little more study, because I don't want to say that they're not and find out that they are. But I really don't believe so at this point.
I think if you go to the Wisconsin DNR website under invasive plants, you can find the whole list.
For sure. And there's a lot of species and hybrids of lupins. So the lady who called earlier, we're not sure exactly what she might be sowing. But it to Raj's comment, it's worthy of investigation.
Yeah. Thank you, Raj. Appreciate it. Betty in Brown Deer, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I have a shrub rose that's giving me problems, and I thought it was dead at the end of the winter. For 4 years, there has been a black walnut that is trying to grow in the middle of it, and I can't quite get down there. So I cut the whole thing back down about 2 feet and cut off all the dead branches. Well, now the rose looks beautiful, but that black walnut is still trying to grow in the middle of it, and I'm not sure how to get rid of it.
Yeah, that the roots will be extensive on that walnut, far beyond what the rose has. And I'm not a huge advocate of chemical use, but what I would do if that were in my yard is I'd keep cutting it back to keep it stressed, you know, let it know you know it's there. But wait until about October as we head into the dormant season and give it a chop at ground level and apply a Stump Be Gone or some sort of a concentrated chemical right on the stump itself, and just very localized, and let that avoid the rose, of course, and let that work its way down into the root system of that plant. Because digging that out would necessitate taking the entire rose out as well, which is something you can do, but getting that rose back in will be the challenge.
Yeah, that makes sense. Betty, thank you. Lynn in Viroqua. Hi there.
I have a rose bush question also.
Okay.
I have a long established rose bush, every year I go through this where the blooms are fine, the leaves seem to be eaten. I never see any bugs on them. I don't know what's happening in the evening. I look underneath the leaves and I don't see anything, or on top, nothing crawling on the branches or the leaves, but they are getting, you know, they are just being eaten up gradually.
Yeah.
Well, for Lynn, I'll describe some roses on the side of my house. They look like something's been chewing on the leaves. They're very thread leaf. Is that what you're seeing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I would send a picture to an extension agent to verify the culprit, but there's a lot of leaf cutting type insects that are either nibbling on your rose leaves or collecting that material for nesting or some other purpose. So there are ways to deal with it, and what I found at my home landscape is they're very selective on the type of rose. I have some roses that are untouched, the shrub roses, but many of my hybrid tea roses are getting eaten. So I would take a photo and share that, but we've never seen the culprit either, so it's tough to say exactly what it is, because there are a couple different things it could be in terms of a critter.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. And Sarah in Zion, Illinois, hello to you.
Good afternoon or morning. So, hi. My gardening question now is, I'm just shocked by my dianthus, these flowers that are supposed to be annuals. I've never grown them before, but last year they just wouldn't die. I mean, it was like 15 degrees for a few days and they just kept, I mean, they were frozen solid. I thought they were dead, but then no, they're fine. And then someone told me to try to overwinter them, and sure enough, even after all these incredible cold snaps, they all came up and they're doing great. And how is it possible that this super green leafy flower can freeze solid and not die?
Well, with dianthus or carnations or pinks is another common name. There's a lot of different kinds. My guess is, now I should ask, was this something that was 12 to 15 inches tall?
Correct.
Okay, it's probably a hybrid Sweet William, which is, there's a lot of some breeding going on right now with Sweet William, which is normally a biennial. That's a plant that goes from seed to bloom in 2 years. So a couple things could have happened. You might be getting, I'll back up and say the modern Sweet Williams bloom every year at this point. So I'd leave them in the ground because you may get a couple years out of them. The other thing that may happen is they may colonize. They might be dropping seed and regenerating their own colony. So it sounds like, are you sure it's the same plant or?
I do know for sure that I saw the whole thing freeze last fall, and then when it warmed up again,
right,
started growing again.
Right.
And then I transplanted several of them, and while they were in like December, and they grew up again. So yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, the vast majority of dianthus are hardy for us, so it's likely that's likely the case.
There you go, Sarah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mark Dwyer, our guest today. Mark is the director of horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. They're celebrating their 30th anniversary, a great time to go visit the gardens and see what they have. They have tons of wonderful plantings and specialty gardens, and I know you're going to enjoy it. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us today, and it's great to have Mark Dwyer back. He directs horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. So it's wonderful to have him along as we talk ornamentals and other plants. I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And I want to go back, Mark, to Nicole, who had called earlier and talking about a plant with two different types of leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And she sent us a photo.
She did. And I appreciate that because that really helps us solve the mystery here. And for Nicole, what you have there is a mulberry. So mulberries actually have a lot of different shapes to their leaves, different lobes, sometimes a one-sided lobe. And I don't see any hydrangea foliage in your image. So my guess is, it may be off camera here, but everything green there is mulberry, likely deposited by birds. Be wary. It'll get large and can end up becoming messy. And they're notoriously hard to dig, but I would get that out of there.
All right. There we go. And it might be growing within the other plant, you're
saying? It could be. If the hydrangea is down lower or there's some kind of naked stems in the back there that also don't look like hydrangeas. But
no.
If the hydrangea is indeed there, I'd still get that mulberry out.
Okay. There we go. Carlene in Brooklyn, thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a question about Rudbeckia trilobia. It is taking over one of my perennial gardens. Finally identified it and pulled up everything that was coming through other plants, like my poppies, and you know, shading them out or crowding them out. Just wondering if there's anything I can do short of pulling it all up, because I do like the black-eyed Susans, but they're just been very invasive.
Yeah.
Well, the short answer, unfortunately, is no, Carlene. You're doing the right thing, and Rudbeckia triloba is gorgeous. And we've had some of the same issue with the reseeding. There's nothing that would specifically target that and not harm the surrounding plants. And it sounds like you're avoiding herbicides, which I commend you for. Good old-fashioned elbow grease is the only way you'll keep up with it. And keep in mind, it'll be a couple years. There's plenty of seeds that'll carry over. And just be vigilant and minimize the population or eradicate it, because it's the gift that keeps on giving.
There you go. Thank you, Carlene. Al in Chippewa Falls, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Al.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on the air. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My comment was about the lupins.
Yeah.
The invasive ones have escaped cultivation in northern Wisconsin, and especially in Bayfield County. It's been a while since I've been a Mercer, but I'm guessing that might be going on there, too. There's also a native one, Lupinus perennis. it's a bit smaller, especially the flower spikes are smaller, and they're two-toned. They've got a whitish keel, and the rest of the petals are blue. That is the larval host for the federally endangered Karner blue, and Wisconsin is one of the only places that that butterfly is left.
Yeah, and in very small area of Wisconsin, as a matter of fact. Al, thanks. Appreciate that call and that information about the lupins. And Jan in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I have a large hydrangea, and it blooms on old wood, and it's like spread out, you know, pretty much. Well, the deer ate the top of each stem off, and it's blooming leaves, but I don't see any sign of flowers. And I was just wondering if I can and when I can cut the stems back.
Well, it's likely the deer have removed most of the flower buds. So at this point in time, you could cut it back if you like. And just for size purposes, if your desire is to give it some shape, you certainly could do it now, knowing that many of the blooms have already been sacrificed. And hopefully a year from now, you can tell the story how the deer didn't nibble on it, yeah. And you have wonderful blooms. So I would go ahead and proceed with the pruning.
All right. There you go, Jan. Thank you. Pat in Hilbert, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thank you. I have had many viburnums die, and I understand it's from a grub. But the one I like the best is a double file, and it's starting to be affected now. And I wonder what the expert would tell me to use on the ground to kill those grubs.
Well, the issue with double file viburnums, you should know at the gardens, we had all eight of ours died down to about 6 inches. So they're nothing but dead wood down to 6 inches. So we trimmed them down. Now, if you think you have a root borer, which is prevalent with a lot of viburnums, you know, give the trunk a wiggle, see if it's getting loose. There's something going on there. I can't recommend a specific chemical to deal with that. I think I would lean on an extension agent to offer that. But if they're already actively undermining and burrowing into those roots or those lower stems, it may be too late. But if you've seen a lot of dieback after this past winter, it possibly could just be winter kill.
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you, Pat. Bill in Racine, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. See, I've got a peony that I want to, pardon me, oh, sorry about that. I want to transplant, and it did bloom, and I cut off the blooms, you know, once the coloring really started dropping off. And the question is, the stems, you know, on this are maybe 24 to 30 inches high. Should I cut them back to about half that and then transplant it? And how long will I have to wait before they rebloom after the transplant?
Well, if this is a traditional herbaceous peony, to be honest, you can move them anytime, but the best time to move peonies is very late in the season, late summer to early fall, as they start to go dormant. And if you've ever moved a peony, it's a task. You've really got to get in there and get that root. If you are determined to move it now and have the location picked out, I would not cut it back. I would leave all the stems and leaves attached. It's going to get floppy and look a little beat up. But that photosynthetic area is going to be important for kind of recharging the plant to get it settled in. Pick a cloudy, rainy day and do it and keep it watered. And it's very difficult to kill a peony, but just be prepared for it to look a little rough for the rest of the year.
All right. There you go, Bill. Thank you. Beth emailed that she has a lot of high bush cranberries, viburnums, growing wild, and this year something is eating the leaves so voraciously that she's afraid they won't survive. She's noticed it in previous years. Anything you know on what's especially active this year? She lives in Elm Grove, just west of Milwaukee County.
You know, it's tough to say. I'm not sure that deer don't nibble. I don't know if deer's a problem for her, but ultimately seeing what that nibbling on the leaves, I don't know if that, again, if they're being torn off and totally consumed, like if there's bare stems or if there's nibble marks, but I guess I'm getting verbose on the fact that I'm not sure without seeing the leaves.
Ellen in Boltonville emailed, she thinks there should be more blossoms on her tomato plants by now. Plants are very healthy looking. They're growing well. what should she be expecting now? They were planted the first week of June. That was kind of, well, under normal circumstances, that would be a fine time to plant, but
I would be patient. I think she's totally fine. The yeah. issue with the planting season is the soil temps have continued to be so cool. For us down in Janesville, the soil temperatures are very reminiscent of late May right now. They're finally warming up. So you're getting a lot of lush growth because of all the rain we're receiving. But I wouldn't give up on them still throwing out some nice blooms and getting a decent crop. So hang tight. It's just a delayed yeah, season.
I agree. John in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. I've got a variety of 9-bark shrubs, and they've got a white coating on some of the leaves. I don't know if this is a detrimental fungus or what, but I am concerned.
It's likely powdery mildew, John.
Yeah.
We've seen severe powdery mildew at Rotary Gardens, and we have about 150 9-barks. Great shrub, which I think you know. But the issue with the mildew is it's so heavy, and normally light powdery mildew is more of a cosmetic thing on lilacs and phlox and some other elements. But it gets so heavy on 9-barks. It warrants removal of the stem or getting some sort of a fungicide on it right away to deal with that. The leaves are likely curling, and if you have a stem that's entirely white leaves, I would remove that. A comment about 9-barks is they respond very quickly from severe pruning, and we cut all our 9-barks down in the winter to about 6 inches. We get brand new growth, and our concern about the mildew is so prevalent, we cut and remove all the stems of every 9-bark in the gardens in those fall and winter months, so we get fresh new growth and are less worried about reinfection of that mildew the following year. So
yeah.
Trim it out or get a fungicide right away.
All right. There you go, John. Thank you so much for calling. Janet in Ridgeway emailed to ask how to get rid of crown vetch without using Roundup. And if she pulls it up by the roots, would overseeding it with something else help?
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but personally, I feel it's impossible to get rid of crown vetch without herbicide. I think any little segment of root that's left will establish, and it will outcompete anything that you could possibly plant around it. And I think many of us have seen them along roadsides where they've been used in previous highway projects where they've just run amok. Beautiful blossoms, but it is a thug and needs to be treated as such. Manual control, I don't feel will work. If some of your listeners have another idea, I'd love to hear it, but it's a thug.
Ashley in New Zealand. Hi, Ashley.
Good morning or afternoon, I think, where you are.
Yes. Well, yes, it's just afternoon.
And as a former Wisconsinite, I just want to tell you that I grow lemon trees outside here in New Zealand. And it's middle of winter now, and my little lemon tree, about 4 foot high, 4 foot circumference, is just laden with fruit.
Ah. Oh.
And let me tell you, two things I would, I know you can't perhaps grow them outside, but I do. And what I do is I never mow around the lemon tree circumference. I always laid it with compost to prevent people from mowing the very shallow rooters.
Yeah.
And they don't, like citrus trees generally, I think. And the other thing is that I wash my feet occasionally with Epsom salts and water, and that lemon tree just loves that water.
Interesting.
Ashley, thank you so much for calling all the way from New Zealand. Appreciate it very much. What time is it there?
It's about 5 o'clock on Saturday morning.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it. Well, New Zealand, they had calls from Germany, and New Zealand's probably further away than Germany.
International audience? Nice.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to hear from them, and I'm glad he's growing those lemon trees. Man, there's nothing better than pulling a lemon or a lime off the tree and eating it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Well, Kyle in Dune, we'll go to you next. Hi, Kyle.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I'm doing some straw bale gardening for the second year in a row, and I think I pruned some tomatoes wrong, and I don't know, they're like curled up all up on themselves, and I don't have an established leader on two different plants. Just wondering if you think those are salvageable? Should I just wait it out, or what do you think?
There may be some insects involved in that, huh?
Yeah, it's tough to say, Kyle. I think, so do you think what you're seeing is indicative of how you pruned them, or do you think you might have a fungal or an insect problem?
I know I pruned it wrong. I know that for sure. Mm-hmm. But I got some straw bales. I'm just doing some straw bale gardening. I don't think that it's going to be, there's no fungus on other stuff. You know, the leaf curl's, I guess, okay on the other ones. It's not as pronounced, but maybe they're like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I would give it some time, to be honest, and maybe consider the challenges of if the shape of the plant is creating an issue with air circulation, because if we continue to have a cool, wet summer, I worry about fungal issues kind of embedding themselves in there. So maybe even a little light pruning to open it up, but without seeing it's real tough to recommend it. But I wouldn't worry about it at this point. You know, give it a couple more weeks and see what happens.
And with straw bales, frankly, you can plant other things on a bale, but about one tomato plant, if you try to put two or three tomato plants on a bale, unless you've got one heck of a long bale, you're going to run into some disease problems. So, and I rarely prune tomato plants, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I like to have the leaves there to get that photosynthesis.
Right. Let them go.
Yeah, let them go. So there you go, Kyle. Christopher in Antioch, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a catalpa tree in my backyard that isn't doing so well after the winter. Most of the branches don't have leaves. There's only one branch with leaves left, and there appears to be some new growth on the trunk. I'm just worried that it might not make it another year. Is there anything I can do to help it live?
Christopher, what size is the tree itself?
It's about 10 foot tall, and the trunk is about 8 inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, do you know if it's a southern or a northern catalpa? Would you know that offhand?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, what I'd recommend is catalpas are notoriously late in leafing out. They're one of the last to leaf out. Some of ours at the gardens had some issues, but I'll mention our southern catalpas. We've got some gold leaf forms and some variegated ones. Catalpas will respond to severe pruning. So if it's looking real thin and you only have one stem and it's looking pretty bedraggled, cut it down to the trunk, like 2 to 3 feet, and that seems really severe. What it does is it unleashes some latent buds that will send up brand new stalks. Now, it'll make it a multi-stem tree. I don't know if you have a single-stem tree right now, but what you'll get is a thicket of new growth. So you have nothing to lose if you feel like it's declining, although you could give it another week or two. But a severe cutback in a catalpa is immediately rewarded with vigorous growth because they want to live and they'll sprout out massive, quick branches and large leaves. So consider a very severe approach to save it.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Christopher. Deborah in Brown Deer, on to you now. Hi, Deborah.
Hello. He made me think, the last caller made me think of this tree I've been trying to identify. I called about a beetle that killed a pine tree, but there's a tree that I see in the landscaping situation, Brown Deer, that's smooth, smooth bark, and it's maybe about 10, 15 feet tall, and it's got multiple branches, and I just love it, and I can't find it anywhere. But my main question is, this beetle has devoured a 40-foot pine tree, a spruce, and I can't describe the beetle. I can't see it, but I can hear it, and it's like, like similar to that. Very loud.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Although I appreciate the sound effects. That was good. And although the damage to the tree obviously is not. You really need to catch one of those little buggers for proper identification. So I don't know if there's any branches low enough that you could go out and try to tap them into a jar, or they might be working their way up to the top of the tree too. So you really need a sample to properly identify it and contend with it, because it could be multiple things. It could be a variety of things that need to be addressed.
Yeah, Yeah, if you can get a good close-up photo of it, you could send it to the Insect Diagnostic Lab. P.J. Leash at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab could probably identify it for you. There's a host of insects that can attack that tree for sure. So you want to get it identified. Thank you, Deborah, for calling. Appreciate it. Well, we've got, Beth in Elm Grove sent a photo of her plant leaves that look it's not good. Got an insect eating away there on the leaves.
Yeah, and that's a photo to send right to PJ Leash that we just talked about, because that's skeletonizing the leaf. It's leaving the veins alone and going for the gaps in between. So tough to say without, you know, again, evidence of the culprit. But yeah, that's significant damage, and it looks like it's on a couple different plants there. Even if you look further down, it's totally skeletonized.
And then just up from that, if you Rebecca emailed to ask what this plant is and how she can get rid of it.
Yeah, that's the notorious thug we just talked about. That's crown vetch. Yeah. And the discussion was herbicide or manual control. And again, herbicide is, and I hate to say it, but we had a patch at the gardens and it was multiple applications of herbicide over the course of 2 years to even get rid of it. So crown vetch, it's beautiful. Pollinators love it, but it is a thug.
Yeah. And speaking of getting rid of things, wild geraniums, how do you get rid of those in a flower bed? Same way?
Wild geraniums are super easy to pull out. So their crown is quite high in the soil. So wait after some rain, get in there and grab them. And even if there's a lot of them, I've had wild geraniums throughout my landscape, and they're quite easy to pull out. And just keep on top of it and do it now before they recede.
Let's go back to your 30th anniversary of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. And you've got, I'm just looking at the whole list of specialty gardens you've got. You got the Entrance Terrace Garden. You've got the Recognition Garden, the Sunken Garden, the Plants of the World Collection, Nancy R. Memorial Children's Garden, the Begonia Collection, the Story Walk in partnership with Hedberg Public Library. You've got the Giant Aquarium. That's open June through October.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to see.
There's a lot. And with our educational mission, our goal is to get visitors to come. We get about 100,000 visitors a year, but this year is a breakout, I think, in many ways. We encourage people to get on our website. I do a blog that's linked to the website and see what we're doing. With our mission of being educationally based, we have all sorts of fun programs, and I think the gardens will look the best they ever have.
Yeah. There, and again, to go to find the garden website?
It's www.rotarybotanicalgardens.org.
Well, I tell you what, Mark, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thanks, Larry.
Mark Dwyer, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at the Rotary Botanical Gardens. Great to have him with us. Thank you for listening. Neil DeBoe will be in next week on Garden Talk. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.